Hello. On this week's program, a conversation with Charles Dutoit. He becomes chief conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra in 2008. John Butler's Carmina Burana has been a staple of Pennsylvania Ballet's repertoire for 40 years. Susan Lewis reports on the ballet's brand new work based on Carl Orff's well-known composition. And Jason Pfeiffer takes a look at Ego Poe Productions, a 16-year-old theater company that recently relocated to Philadelphia after losing its New Orleans home to Hurricane Katrina. The group makes its debut as a Philadelphia-based company with Spring Awakening this week. That's all ahead this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Greater Philadelphia Tourism Marketing Corporation, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and the listeners of WRTI.
When Christoph Eschenbach closes the door of his dressing room for the last time as music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra sometime next year, Kimmel Center workers will change the sign to read Chief Conductor and Artistic Advisor. The new regular occupant of the plushest room backstage will be Charles Dutoit. He'd lead the orchestra and do almost everything a music director would do, but for four seasons only. In 2012, an as yet unknown conductor will hang his tails in the music director's wardrobe. Charles Dutoit has had a long relationship with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Since his first appearance on the podium at the Mann Center in 1980, he's been back most years to guest conduct. He's been principal conductor of the orchestra's summer residence at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center since 1990. He also directed the Mann Center program from 1990 to 1999. Dutoit was music director of the Montreal Symphony Orchestra from 1977 to 2002, principal conductor of the Orchestra National de France from 1991 to 2001, and principal conductor of Tokyo's NHK Symphony from 1996 to 2003, meaning that for a number of years in the late 90s, Dutoit was in charge of three major orchestras at the same time. I spoke with Charles Dutoit last Saturday at the Kimmel Center. First of all, congratulations on the new appointment.
Thank you very much. It's very nice.
Give us some idea of the discussions that took place leading up to this announcement.
Well, I mean, it's what can I say? The orchestra needs to have somebody, you know, here in Philadelphia for a couple of seasons. Now, for the last 5 years, I've been invited to become a music director here and there, several orchestras in this country and also in Europe, but you know, I didn't want to take a new position because I'd been 40 years already conducting and being music director from 1963 when I got my first position to 2002. So it's actually, for 39 years. So I thought it was enough for a while. And then, you see, I wanted to use some time free for other activities such as traveling in some countries which I cannot visit professionally and so on. So when the orchestra asked me to come, you see, I could not take a position as a music director anyway because I'm too old for that, you see. When I would start here, I would be 71. And, you know, when if you are really a responsible person, music director, you have to think of at least 10 years of activity with an orchestra. So, you know, I want to have, as I always say these days, because this question has been asked several times, I want to have an early retirement at 76, you see. And that's why I think I'm very happy with this solution, and the orchestra seems to be happy too. And they have 5 years now to find somebody who will take over the orchestra in 76 at my age, in 2012.
You've had a more than quarter century relationship with this orchestra. Can you tell us how that's evolved since the early 1980s when you first conducted here?
Oh, it's a long relationship, which started in the 50s in Geneva when I heard the orchestra for the first time with Ormandy. I think it was their first trip to Europe, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, we had never heard an orchestra like this ever. So we were so impressed. And as I told the orchestra when I came back the other day, I always kept that in my mind as the reference for the high standards of an orchestra, what an orchestra can achieve. Now, when I started here in 1980, you know, in the summer of 1980, for a full week at the Mann Music Center, I found that incredible orchestra, which was reacting to any sensitive gesture, you know, when you lift your finger, it could change the color and so on. And I always loved to play with them. They have that kind of sound that is very unique. and that they tend, you know, they had a hard time to keep completely because of the changes. You know, it's normal when you the old members of the orchestra are retired, and then you see the young people come and they are so fantastic, and but they have to be led into some kind of tradition. You see. But it's very easy to show them how to play. See, that sound can come back very quickly. So you know, I've done so many concerts with them all over the years, a huge repertoire with different styles, and we have made tours. Went to Florida, went to New York many times, and so on. It's like I'm at home here. You know, it's I see my friends. The old friends, and we have a very nice private relationship as well, so it's all good.
You talk about this Philadelphia sound. Can you describe that for us?
Well, you know it, don't you? The sound of the that depth in the string, that dark sound, it's like a cognac, you know, and brandy, you know, brandy sort of. There are some sound like more like a Bordeaux wine, more or like a Burgundy, but this one is a cognac. You understand what I mean? It's a very special old pale. Mm? That is that kind of sound, and that has been built over the years by the tradition of Stokowski and Ormandy, and the Academy of Music, and the kind of repertoire that they have played mostly. You know, things such as the music of Rachmaninoff. Shostakovich, of Sibelius, I mean, and so on. This kind of, you know, dark, beautiful, dark sound in the strings. And they have also, of course, these fantastic players, the solo players, woodwinds and brass, you know. So I think it's normal that today orchestras tend to play a lot of different things. Before, it was more focused on a certain repertoire, which was very... important to build the general sound and the image of the orchestra. But now today, many orchestras have to play so many different things and adjust to different styles and so on. So the tendency is to become a little more flexible in a way, but also a little more international, which I don't like. You see, I like the old fashioned way of having these orchestras with their specific personality and try to keep them. Now, the recording business have been involved so much, and they tend to make everything sound the same, you know. And I don't like that. I like to go to be here and get the Philadelphia sound and personality and go to Boston, and it's a different sound. Or go to London or to Chicago, you see. I like that, you see, personally. But, of course, the sound of an orchestra doesn't mean everything, because it's the sound of the music that you play, you see. Of course, we cannot have the sound of the Philadelphia Orchestra when you play Haydn Symphony, you understand? We have to adjust to the style of the music that we play. But basically, you know, the personality of an orchestra includes that kind of sound, you see.
When you're conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra, is it necessary for you to moderate your conducting style, or do the players themselves know how to achieve this Philadelphia sound? How much does it depend on the conductor, do you think?
No. I think you have to help to produce it. Or sometimes you have to remind them, ask them, hey, where is this famous Philadelphia sound? And the one who know what it was, they can produce it. But the some younger players, you know, they have got to be let in, as I told you before. They have to be told and show how to get in. But, I mean, this week was rather spectacular, how it came back very quickly, you see.
In rehearsal, what's your approach to dealing with the musicians? Are you quiet, contemplative, giving small instructions, or are you passionate and very avid on the podium?
Well, it depends on what you are doing and the result you get. You see, I have no preconceived idea about organizing a rehearsal. You see, I arrive and usually I like to, wherever I am, to play at least 20 minutes, 25 minutes, sometimes a full symphony. I would start at the first rehearsal to play a full symphony, and then you know, things I know, for instance, because I know this orchestra so well, I know when something doesn't go well the first time, I don't even have to stop, because I know the second time it will be corrected just by themselves. You see, it's just a question of having a second experience of this passage. But sometimes then you, if it doesn't come, whatever orchestra it is, you have to start working and rehearsing, and there is a rehearsal technique depending on the problem. You know, it's a long chapter. You know, it's hard to answer such a question in a minute, because it depends on what kind of specific problem you have to face, whether it's a problem of intonation, of balance, of ensemble, of rhythm, you know, and each specific problem must be dealt separately. And usually, you know, an orchestra like the Philadelphia Orchestra, things go well very fast because they are, you know, the equipment is sensational, you see what I mean?
Whether you've been called music director or chief conductor, you will, in those 4 years, contribute to the history of the Philadelphia Orchestra. What will your programming philosophy be? Will it be a heavy emphasis on standard repertoire? Are you looking forward to commissioning new work? Are you looking forward to bringing perhaps less performed work to the Philadelphia audience?
Well, I think you gave the answer. It's exactly that, you see. You know, our responsibility, whatever position or title you have, is the same. We have to, there is a program of commission pieces to commission composers. And, you know, of course, we have to have the standard repertoire because the public likes it. And we also have, I also keep in mind the kind of music I need to keep that sound that we are talking about. And also, obviously, you know, the curiosity of bringing new things. So, I mean, you answered yourself.
Maestro, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to you.
Charles Dutoit. He becomes chief conductor and artistic advisor of the Philadelphia Orchestra in September 2008.
You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI.
In August 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, devastating much of New Orleans. Many neighborhoods in the city still remain uninhabitable today. Crime rates are high, businesses are struggling to rebuild, and many arts groups face an uphill battle to merely survive. But as WRTI's Jason Pfeiffer reports, one theatre company from the Big Easy, which endured the hurricane, is finding new life in Philadelphia.
As Hurricane Katrina was moving in along the coast of Louisiana and Mississippi, members of the Ego Poe Theatre Company were just arriving in Philadelphia to take part in the annual Fringe Festival. They had left their home in New Orleans about a half day earlier than planned to beat the evacuation traffic, but they weren't especially worried. In a place like New Orleans, preparing for hurricanes is a familiar drill. Indeed, initially, friends had told them that damage from the storm wasn't all that bad, and because they were on the road for over 18 hours, they weren't keeping a close eye on news coverage. It wasn't until they arrived in Philadelphia that they heard the levees had broken, flooding New Orleans. A large crowd of reporters greeted the Ego Poe company at the theater with the news. Shortly thereafter, Ego Poe founder and artistic director Lane Savidov says a local television station taped the theater ensemble as they watched news footage of the flooding for the first time.
I'll never forget, I have it on tape, seeing the company members literally breaking down into tears watching it. And it then launched us into a pretty chaotic mode. We ran the show for 3 weeks. You know, the show has to go on. But during that whole time, every company member had no idea what was next. And more importantly, we had no idea when we could even find out how long it would be before we knew what was next. So you didn't know how long it was going to be before you got back into your neighborhood.
Savidov says it ended up being about 3 months before most of the company members could return to even look at their homes in New Orleans. Nearly all of them were in the flood zone and had been under 6 to 12 feet of water. The theater that Ego Poe used was severely damaged, too. The company lost just about everything. Lane Savidov explains that the 12 members of the group were left to evaluate whether or not to continue.
Every single person in the company sat down for weeks at a time and said to themselves, I can do anything in life. Everything's been erased. What do I want to do? Which is an amazing freedom and a horrifically torturous freedom to be given. We don't actually want that in life, I found out. We don't want that chance to have everything be erased and start over. It's kind of hellish.
Though overwhelmed and discouraged, many of the Ego Poe members did decide to continue with the group. But with so much of the New Orleans population displaced, Louisiana simply wouldn't be able to support the theater ensemble anymore. It became apparent to Lane Savidov, who grew up in Bucks County and graduated from Haverford College, that Philadelphia would be as good a place as any to relocate the company. In addition to having family in the area, the style of the group fits in well among other theater companies in the region. Ego Poe, which is derived from the French phrase for the physical self, is a physical theater company. That is, they place high emphasis on the physical movement of theater, such as dance, mime, and puppetry, as opposed to the more conventional literary and spoken aspects of drama. In recent years, physical or movement-based theater has become a sort of buzzword in Philadelphia theater circles, with local companies like Pig Iron, New Paradise Laboratories, and Hotel Obligado. However, in contrast to other physical companies that develop mostly original work, Ego Po, which was started in 1991, is committed to doing modernist classics. Lane Savidov describes such plays as work from a golden period from 1880 to the 1950s. These include dramas from playwrights like Ibsen, August Strindberg, Chekhov, Eugene O'Neill, Tennessee Williams, and Arthur Miller.
Those plays, for me, have a stage poetry that contemporary theater rarely has. Contemporary theater serves a very important purpose, and I'm glad that Philadelphia is a city that has so much new play work being done. But I feel like the grand theater of the early part of this past century is unmatchable. We think about those grand actors from the 1950s on film, Elizabeth Taylor playing Maggie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and the size of the acting is just thrilling. We almost wish we could be in her shoes acting it. It seems almost joyful, even though it's this heavy, intense emotion. But because there's so much emotional release into it, it feels joyous. And I love that dynamic release.
This grand, epic style of theater that Ego Po subscribes to is what convinced Aaron Oster to become the company's associate artistic director last year. In Oster's view, the company's strong point is its dedication to and rigorous training in multiple disciplines.
The movement, music, the voices, the text, all of that at an equal level, a sort of total theater. And I don't find that very often. I find that people talk very well, or they move very well, or there are many interesting pictures up on the stage and the script is negligible. And so to combine all of those things into one big experience, I think that's really important. And also that's really entertaining.
To develop work that has the total package that Oster talks about, artistic director Lane Savidov has long made a habit of using a resident group of actors for Ego Po pieces. He doesn't recast for each new production, but rather, over the course of many shows, the same group trains, rehearses, and performs their work together. For actors who might prefer to move around from show to show, company to company, this sort of approach may be too restrictive. But for others, like Doug Green, who recently joined Ego Po, it's a very appealing setup.
Having a group that you work with that much, I think that it just brings so much more richness to what you see on stage. Even if it's something as simple as two actors sitting together on stage, not speaking, the relationship that has been established through all the work they've done together is going to make that such a rich picture that the audience is going to be thrilled to watch it. That's what I think sets it apart.
A theater company wouldn't be set apart from other companies, however, if they never produced plays. Yet over the past 18 months, it's been very difficult for Ego Po to do just that without the benefit of a space to call their own and cash. Lane Savidov says he spent the better part of the year following the hurricane working fruitlessly to receive compensation from FEMA for the theater company. Yet with the help of a small interest loan from another federal agency, the Small Business Administration, the company has been able to finally move forward. They're now mounting their first production as a Philadelphia-based company called Spring Awakening, a controversial 1891 play by Frank Wedekind about a group of 14-year-olds coming of age in late 19th century Europe. The drama's been produced by Ego Po before in New Orleans. But with many of the veteran members still dispersed throughout the country to make a living while the company gets established in Philadelphia, Lane Savidov explains that this latest version of the play is using only new resident members and a handful of other local actors.
A practical reason for choosing this play was it's a great play to expand the ensemble with. It's very rare to find a play with 11 good parts. It is a play with 11 good parts. It fits the training very well, so it fit very well taking those 11 actors through the training process and applying it directly to the play. And going back and doing a play from New Orleans felt very right to me. It felt like a little bit of rebirth of something that was lost.
Savidov notes the rebirthing process has been hard and slow. But with the start of spring less than 2 weeks away, and in making a debut as a Philadelphia company this weekend, this latest production really is a spring awakening for Ego Po.
WRTI's Jason Pfeiffer. With adult themes, Spring Awakening from Ego Po Productions is at the Adrian Theater at 2030 Sampson Street in Philadelphia through March 25th. Even if you don't know the name, you probably recognize the music. Its Latin text, sung by a massive choir, has been used in films and film trailers and in countless commercials. A number of sports teams use it to create a gladiatorial atmosphere when players take to the field. Now, as Pennsylvania Ballet premieres a new production of Carmina Burana, WRTI's Susan Lewis takes a look at the work and its extraordinary popular appeal.
The instantly recognizable chorus of O Fortuna begins and ends Carmina Burana, an arrangement of 20-some mostly Latin and some German poems set to music. Its story as quirky as its music is powerful. A 20th-century sensation based on 13th-century poetry. A secular text discovered in a place of prayer. Lusty tales of life and love, gambling and gluttony from the pens of defrocked monks.
It's about desire, humanity, and it's a universal piece of music.
Matthew Neenan choreographed Pennsylvania Ballet's new production of Carmina Burana.
It's amazing that it was written way back. It's something that could be written now and stand alone.
The story of Carmina Burana starts with the discovery of hundreds of medieval poems in a Benedictine monastery at Buren in Bavaria in 1803. A text was published in 1847 by Johann Andreas Schmeller, who named the collection Carmina Burana, literally, Songs of Buren. Nearly 100 years later, German teacher and composer Karl Orff put 23 of them to music. In 1937, the work was first performed by the Frankfurt Opera. Within a few years, it became widely popular.
It has a very infectious kind of rhythmic drive to it, very clear melodies. Its whole sense of the orchestra and the shape that the orchestra unfolds is something that it comes very intuitively to listeners, I think. So I think that helps explain a lot of the popularity.
Jeffrey Kahlberg is the chairman of the music department at the University of Pennsylvania.
There are three basic elements. One is that there's a sort of a wrong note tonality, I guess you would say. So there's a familiar sense of the music. But there are these dissonant notes thrown in, and that's sort of, you know, it sounds like they're wrong notes, but it's very simple chant-like melodies. They sound like a kind of ritualistic chanting that's going on in the voices. And then there, in the orchestra, there's what we call ostinati, repeating patterns, and they kind of layer on top of each other. And you put all those three things together, and you get this kind of neo-pagan kind of sound.
Was not totally new. Karl Orff is said to have been influenced by classic Greek tragedy, Italian Baroque musical theater, and by the music of Igor Stravinsky, in particular, his Oedipus Rex.
Stravinsky himself thought that Orff was lifting him wholesale, basically. He complained about it in his letters, that this was, you know, someone who's basically ripping him off.
While early performances often involved music, theater, and dance, over the last 70 years, Carmina Burana has often been performed in concert. In the 1960s, John Butler choreographed a dance as part of a New York opera production. Pennsylvania Ballet artistic director Roy Kaiser says his company was the first to bring it into the repertoire.
And it soon became a staple, it soon became a signature piece, whatever you want to call it. We performed it often. The company became very associated with the work very quickly.
The company continued to dance the Butler work, but in recent years, Kaiser says he began to think about doing something new, something that would not only fit the changing times, but would be suited to the company's current roster.
The dancers in the company today are very different dancers than we had in the company throughout the 60s and the 70s, even into the 80s. The more I thought about it, the more I felt, you know, with all due reverence to the Butler work, maybe it's time to rethink it. So I had a couple of conversations with Matthew Neenan.
We were like kind of watching it and talking at the same time backstage. And I was like, these costumes need to be updated. It's like, actually, the whole thing needs a new, needs to be refreshed. And I never really even thought about it again, honestly, until last year. And he said, well, we're going to put Carmina back in the next year's roster. And he said, I thought maybe we'd do this new one with you. Kind of had a freak out moment thinking, can I get something like this together by March?
When Matthew Neenan typically gets a dance together, he first immerses himself in the music, then envisions the dancers, and moves into the studio to work out the details, letting the choreography feed the process, before he has any particular ideas about costumes or lighting. But he says this production was different. Instead of just listening to the music, Neenan says he became obsessed with the poetry. Carmina Burana doesn't have any real storyline. It's more of a journey, says Neenan. It begins and ends with the familiar O Fortuna. In between, the poetry travels from subjects of springtime, to a tavern, to the court of love. Neenan met with set and costume designers and came up with a vision, the universal music inspiring an almost futuristic feel. The production uses a set with a movable mountain representing the Wheel of Fortune. The costumes are quasi-literal interpretations of the text.
There's so much talk in the spring section about maidens and wanting, you know, finding your true love and finding your mate. And so I had this idea of these brides. I'm like, oh, what if there's these creaturesque looking brides that were kind of like awkward and like trying to find their way. And so stuff like that, really, it inspired me.
One of the great things about a brand new work, says Roy Kaiser, is that it can reflect the specific talents of the dancers involved. The tavern scene in this production of Carmina Burana is an example.
He did a dance for two men in the company, Philip Colucci and Francis Vallette, who are both very athletic dancers, very strong dancers. Phil Colucci is a black belt in karate, and Matt really utilized their specific talents for this dance that I don't know if anyone else could do it the same way that they do it.
I actually pick him up by the throat and stuff like that, so it's fun. Our duet is really kind of violent. Because Phil and I are close friends, like we're used to like slugging each other just for the fun of it anyway. So.
This collaborative process results in a new creation, one that reflects the choreographer, the particular dancers with whom he's working, and the current state of the art as ballet and dancers continue to evolve. And Karl Orff's phenomenally popular composition gets yet another incarnation, a full staging with theater, dance, and music returning it to its classical home.
WRTI's Susan Lewis. Pennsylvania Ballet's production of Matthew Neenan's Carmina Burana, paired with George Balanchine's Serenade, is at the Academy of Music in Philadelphia through March 17th. And that's it for now. Our special thanks this week to Catherine Blodgett and Laura Stibitz. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly. Our executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Creatively Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Greater Philadelphia Tourism Marketing Corporation, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and the listeners of WRTI.